Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, hello out there. Hello out there. I'm recording this from Disney World in Orlando. You might notice that there's a problem with the sound levels at the start, but they fix as I go throughout the episode. I'm on a roller coaster recording this, apparently. That's at least what it gets better, okay? The recording gets better. I just want to say I'm recording this from Orlando, Florida at Disney World. I'm just trying to quickly say that to the audience. Please, just let me get this message through to them before the episode starts. There's not a whole lot of bells and whistles. Oh, God. But I hope you enjoy. It's a little bit short, too, but I'll be back with a better one when I get home. Whoa, I got all wet. Oh, crap. Tiana's Fun Coaster, whatever the fuck this thing's called. Ice Cocktails, Like Stay Paranoid. I'll be back real soon. Not my first choice of a vacation, but a vacation nonetheless. I'm happy for my kids and my girl, and we are having fun. We're having fun. I'm going to figure it out. The episode will be much better quality. Whoa, damn. Woohoo, pass the cotton candy. Yeah.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. Acid, LSD, seems to have a perversely violent influence over some people, leading to heinous acts of crime. Schizophrenia often has the same distinction, with many attributed murders being of the nastiest variety, disgusting acts performed on the victim, things that can't be explained later, just gruesome stuff, the coroner's report usually containing words like decapitation and cannibalism. Oftentimes, a mentally ill or heavily intoxicated perpetrator will catch some form of leniency in court due to their lack of faculties at the time of the event, but mincing words over those who mince meat is maybe a misnomer, and I'm sorry I'm not making much sense, and you can't make dollars if you don't make sense. I did a lot of acid in my youth, and I know that it doesn't so much influence as pull from you acid does. It opens you up, which can be sometimes scary, sometimes beautiful. God or something enormous seems quite obvious, undeniable when tripping on acid. But to allow the devil in on it, that's a choice. And whether or not you want to believe such influences are real in the world, it doesn't matter. Because the proof is in the destruction left behind by those who choose to open that door. And it should be case closed when what's found inside an individual, cracked open by drugs or mental illness, is the stuff of true nightmare. Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. The Reverend's Boyfriend. Oh my God. What a title. What an intro too. Both equally confusing. So let's at least get one straight for now. The Reverend's Boyfriend claimed to be straight. The Reverend himself later claimed to be straight too, and truly it doesn't matter whether the Reverend's boyfriend or the Reverend himself were straight, but like with claiming to not be a killer because of the influence of mental illness or drugs, that's a tough sell, saying that the Reverend's boyfriend wasn't gay. I'm going to take it easy on the Reverend. He was a school principal, a pillar of the community, and the fact that we know about his one-time boyfriend truly isn't his fault. Taking up a profession such as a Baptist reverend, where you rail against such acts as railing other men, when that's what you're into, is pretty questionable. But being outed in the way Reverend Benjamin Calvin Thomas was, I, for one, can forgive him, and perhaps you will too, unless you're a Baptist, that is. David Earl Miller, his boyfriend, was in his early 20s when he met the Reverend. Revving his vehicle to a stop was the Reverend on the side of a Knoxville highway. Miller, originally from Ohio and on the run from a reputation for being a thief and a rapist, was what the Reverend considered to be a drifter. Having a heart for such young men, and a hard-on, Reverend Thomas invited Miller to stay with him at his bungalow in South Knoxville, a fairly secluded spot in the trees atop Wise Hills Road. There they began a sexual relationship, under the guise of David Earle being a pet project of the Reverend's. The young man would be tasked with chores and given money for his help around the property. The Reverend would claim that the sexual aspect of their relationship was short-lived, as both men felt they needed to smarten up in the eyes of God. Soon the Reverend was more of a father figure to David, who took to calling the locally known and respected man as Unc, as in uncle, though perhaps that was just a safe word. So that explains the title. Now let me see if I can clear up where 23-year-old David Earle Miller was coming from before drifting into the bedsheets of a Knoxville Baptist reverend and school principal. This story is a little buried, not sure why. He was a damaged young man, David Earle. By the spring of 1981, he had survived an upsetting childhood, then escaped to Ohio before he could be inevitably incarcerated. I mentioned that Miller was an accused rapist and thief in his past life. The thievery was for auto theft. His abuses towards women were well known, but somehow all charges have been dropped against him. Ohio was no doubt happy to say bio to David Earle Miller when he hit the road by 19. He was a ticking time bomb, set and wound by the circumstances of his youth, which included atrocious treatment from his guardians. To give you an idea, David Earle Miller's attorney once wrote to the Tennessee governor requesting clemency and sharing how his client grew up in a house where his stepfather once, quote, knocked the boy out of a chair, hit him with a board, threw him into a refrigerator with such force it dented the fridge and bloodied Miller's head, dragged him through the house by his hair, and twice ran David Earle Miller's head through a wall. The attorney further stated that David Earle had been forced to have sex with his own mother on three occasions, and he had been suicidal through his teenage years after attempting to kill himself twice before the age of 10. The Tennessee governor took all of this into consideration when deciding whether or not David Earle Miller should be executed for his penultimate crime that occurred on May 20th of 1981. I'll fill you in on that event now and let you judge for yourself. David Earle, he had been drinking. He also took a bunch of acid this day. The Reverend's boyfriend was known to have a low tolerance for alcohol. It made him a monster. But the LSD really put him over the top, apparently. The Reverend didn't approve of David Earle drinking. He especially didn't like the drugging. It went against his belief systems. Maybe. There was a girl who took the same acid as Miller, and she shared that he took twice the amount as her and ate the cardboard the acid had been sold to them on. Acid, or LSD, comes in a few forms, but this was blotter acid, absorbed into paper squares, and Miller was sure to get every drop he could to wash down the vodka and beer he'd drunk all this day. The cardboard maybe soaked up some alcohol, but surely it had also soaked up some of the hits of acid it had been a containment device for, a place card for. The girl who had done half as much shared that she was fucked up for 12 hours, and that the acid was quite strong. Miller, with his history, probably wasn't the best guy to be walking around with three or more hits of strong acid pumping through his hairy head, making his crazy blue eyes and blonde mustache dance on his face. He was a handsome young man, and the Reverend, along with David Earle's mother, apparently, weren't the only ones who thought so. Enter 23-year-old Lee Standifer, this Wednesday of mid-May 1981. Betty Davis Eyes is the number one song in the country. Something tells me that Lee would have liked that song. She had nice eyes. If you see a picture of Lee Standifer, you'll notice they seem a little drowsy, those eyes, but that's the result of her having suffered from diffuse brain damage, a diagnosis given at the age of 5. Lee was able to live a fairly normal life despite this. Reports from the time have her described as mentally retarded, but that's not fair. Lee was much more than any description of a disability. She was described as one of the happiest people one can ever get to know, having a smile for everybody, and if you met her once, she considered you friends. Lee Standifer was greatly loved by her friends and her family. She checked in with them constantly and was recently given the freedom of having her own apartment through the YWCA. Lee might have had the mentality of a 12-year-old, but could read at a 12th grade level. She loved her visits to the library and was a constant reader. Lee had a special Olympics gold medal from her performance in the backstroke at a Colorado event. Her loving mother, once what was to come was done, then dragged on for years in the courts, held that medal close, a reminder of just how special her little girl had been. By the time Lee Standifer met who she thought of as her new boyfriend and David Earl Miller, Lee had a lot going for her and a lot behind her. She lived near her sister, who was staying on campus at the University of Tennessee. Lee had a job in a chicken processing plant. She was alive, vibrant, and thriving, until the reverend's boyfriend stomped her out. They had met in downtown Knoxville, at the library, believe it or not, and exchanged numbers. David Earl was drinking at a downtown bar when he called Lee at her apartment. He asked her if she wanted to join him for drinks to talk about the books they'd taken out on their last date. Lee got ready quickly and went out to meet David. Her thoughts were maybe of Alice in Wonderland. David Earl's were more on a perverse piece of literature that he picked up from the library. It had him thinking of sex and deviance. Insatiability was the novel name, transcribed from Polish. I read some of it and couldn't get a good sense as to how it riled him up, so of course I didn't have 4 or 5 hits of acid in me while reading. The most I've ever done is 3 hits of acid, and I don't ever want to revisit that trip. I can't imagine being in the head of a wild 22-year-old like David Earl, sober, let alone with an insane dose of acid greasing the wheels that turned him to annihilate poor, precious Lee Standifer. They went for those drinks at downtown Knoxville's Hideaway Lounge. A cab driver, James Shook, would pick the couple up later that afternoon and deliver them to the residence of school principal and Reverend Calvin Thomas. The cab driver, Shook, would later recall how inebriated the girl had been and how strange the fella. David Earl had apparently gotten Lee so drunk that she had wet her pants. Either that or they'd had too many laughs on the date, which I doubt. Perhaps fear was a contributor to her wetting her pants, though Lee's mother would share that her daughter wouldn't have seen the danger coming. She only thought the best of people and their intentions. So I'm left to believe that the intentions of David Earl were to get her so drunk that she ended up wetting her pants and being completely out of it and in a position where he could take full advantage of her. The Reverend returned home from church activities that evening to find David Earl sitting on the steps inside the garage. The Reverend could tell something was wrong. The young man had his shirt off and wore only blue jeans. On his face, he wore a look of bewilderment. Everything was soaking wet. It's kind of cool out. It's May. The garage floor is soaked. The living room carpet, once they go inside, the kitchen, everything's wet. Reverend Thomas decides when he sees the blood splattered and the streaking of blood around his home, the carpet ruined, that David Earl Miller has to go. Miller tries to explain that he'd gotten into a fight and broke his nose, that he'd had too much to drink and made a mess around the house, though he tried to clean it up with a garden hose inside the house. "That's cute, David. You're cute, David Earl. But I'm sorry. I think it's time we parted ways, son. Tomorrow morning I will drive you to the highway, back to where I found you." That's how it went, according to the Reverend and his boyfriend. The two got some sleep, and early May 21st, 1981, David Earl was dropped off on the I-40 Mabry Hood Road exit, handed $25 by the Reverend, and wished good luck. God bless. The Reverend would soon tell investigators that he believed David Earl was headed to Houston. In reality, the killer hitched his way home to Ohio. It's not clear if the Reverend covered for his boyfriend here. I'll let you be the judge. It is clear that if so, he would only buy time, not a ticket, to hell.
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had 3 jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
The Reverend went to school. He worked all day, then returned home at 6:30 p.m. 12 hours after dropping off David, and 24 hours since finding his lover in a frazzled state that provoked him to get rid of the young man, Lee Standifer, who had been called in as missing the previous evening by her mother, is discovered by the Reverend. He sees something in his backyard. He says this is for the first time that he understands something nefarious is going on here. He sees a blue t-shirt hanging on a dogwood tree. He walked to this marker across his property, 100 feet from the house. In a thicket is where the Ediff Place blue fabric swayed, a spring breeze. All was calm. David Earle was finally out of the Reverend's life. Then the Reverend saw the naked body of Lee Standifer in a pile of leaves. The girl was face up and horribly injured, full of holes, not bullet holes, punctures. The head was swollen with a hematoma, the arms extended above the head. Wrists were bound with a hemp rope that trailed to around the throat. She had been dragged in this way, out here. The Reverend maybe already knew, but if he didn't, that had to be a long walk back to the house to call police and tell them what his boyfriend had done. What David Earl Miller had done, he later claimed he could not remember. Once he was arrested in Columbus while trying to pass a $1 bill as a 20, Miller was brought back to Knoxville to face the music. He admitted hitting Lee Standifer. She had been angry with him, he said, because he had plans of moving to Houston. He remembered being extremely high on acid. The blood splatter from her face still hung in the air of his memory. He recalled tying her up and dragging her out of the house. Everything else was a blur. The evidence on her body showed that David Earle had used a fire poker to strike and rip holes in the girl. A Bowie knife had been used to rip through the throat and stab up in a way that shattered the jaw and left a wound in the roof of Lee's mouth. A sexual assault had occurred. Bruising in the shape of hands was found on the inner thighs, and David Earl Miller's sperm proved the rape. A bloody hammer and spike had been used to smash through the ribs and chest and back. Had David Miller been in such a hallucinatory state that he dispatched of a vampire in his mind? He couldn't tell you. What was clear is that it had been a massacre of a single body belonging to a sweet, harmless young woman with the mentality of a little girl who was just so excited to have a boyfriend. The Reverend's boyfriend. It's difficult to imagine that the Reverend didn't notice the blood spatter on the walls that night or early the next morning. The bloody hammer, the stake, the gore-tipped poker, the carpet squelching with not just water, there's blood. That must have been one hell of a nosebleed, David Earle. David Earle Miller went to his grave, claiming the Reverend knew nothing of what he'd done to Lee Standifer until he found her standing in the trees. And it took a long time for David Earle to find that grave after having been sentenced to death by electrocution back in March of 1982. The Attorney General had this to say about Miller, quote, David Earl Miller is a cold-blooded, obsessed, deliberate, and cunning killer who took advantage of a 23-year-old girl who was slightly retarded and infatuated with him. She had no idea what kind of violent person he was, end quote. And ouch, that hurt everyone's feelings somehow. In 1987, David Earl Miller was granted a new trial when it was decided that the prosecution should not have been allowed to share with jurors David Earl's former rape charges as they had been dropped. The second trial went the same way, even though Miller's defense went heavy on the impact of their client's childhood. Despite sharing more details about his mother, of how she had brain damage from toxic fume exposures at a plastics plant she worked at, and how she had drank heavily through a pregnancy, and how she had raped her son 3 times and provided such horrific care that David Earle, at just 6 years old, had allegedly attempted to hang himself, the judge couldn't get past what had happened to Lee Standifer, the crime being deemed, quote, especially heinous, atrocious, and cruel. From there, it was appeal after appeal. Decade after decade, Lee Standifer's mother, Helen, spoke up on this 36-year wait for justice and nearly constant concern that her daughter's killer would find a way out of prison. Quote, the one thing we feel very strongly about was that he should never be out there on the streets for anybody else to go through this. With the way the laws were at the time, we were told with a life sentence he might be able to get out in the streets in 13 years. Of course, I had no idea how long it would take for a sentence to be carried out. It's unreal, frankly. End quote. On December 6th of 2018, nearly 40 years since the senseless murder of forever 23-year-old Lee Standifer, David Earl Miller, looking like shit, ate a final meal of fried chicken, mashed potatoes, biscuits, and coffee. He was brought to the electric chair where he muttered the last words, quote, "Beats being on death row." The press looked on in horror as he was then cooked to death in the electric chair. David Earl had that option, as he had been sentenced to death at a time where the chair was still an option. A recently botched lethal injection had helped him make the shocking decision. There was a priest on hand. No reverend. And that'll do it. David Earl Miller was declared dead at 7:25 p.m., December 6, 2018. He was the longest-serving death row inmate in Tennessee's history. There are a few people who had issue with the execution. Lee Standifer's mother wasn't one of them. She couldn't be bothered either way. It had gone on too long. She didn't attend. She said it was just all too much. It was too long. It was unreal. As she said, by this point, the crime scene photos from the Lee Standifer murder were deemed too gruesome to even be displayed in court. The crime itself was unreal and seemed that way to David Earl as well, due to his extremely bad acid trip. The way he'd strung Lee up, dragged her out into the woods, hung her in the trees. The way he'd done that seemed indicative of him having done something like that possibly before. Protesters outside the prison stood vigil for the reverend's boyfriend. They stood there for future death row inmates doomed to die as well that had taken part in a lawsuit against the state that David Earl had spearheaded. He was good at that, spearheading. Remember the poker, the making jokes about horrible things as per usual. Let's take a look into some of these guys here that were in on the lawsuit against Tennessee with the way that lethal injection was being used to kill these gentlemen from time to time. The first of them being Nicholas Todd Sutton, one of David Earl's buddies here, an American serial killer responsible for murdering two acquaintances and his own grandmother in North Carolina and Tennessee from August to December in 1979. Yeah, serial killer. He looks like a nice guy, though. He, on Christmas of 79, he went to the police department to report his grandmother missing. It turns out he had stuffed his grandmother's body in a bag after stabbing her a bunch of times, weighed it down with a cinder block, and then thrown it into the Nolichucky River. Looks like he killed a bunch of other people here, too. Oh, he killed somebody in prison as well. A 44-year-old named Carl Isaac Astep, who was serving a life term for raping a 9-year-old girl in Knoxville. They got in a fight, and Sutton killed him with a homemade knife. Well, that's pretty cool that he did that, though. That was nice, huh? Who else do we got that was hanging out with David Earl, complaining about being executed here? Stephen Michael West. What did Stephen Michael West do? Couldn't have been that bad. On March 17, 1986, a mother-daughter pair, 51-year-old Wanda Lou Romines and 15-year-old Sheila Ann Romines, were held hostage in their home by two men, including this fucking guy. And they were murdered, tortured first, and the 15-year-old was raped. Ah. Okay, so they wanted to kill that guy too. And then there was an issue with the botched execution that had happened leading up to David Earl's execution, the botched execution of Billy Ray Eyrick. What did Billy Ray Eyrick do? He was sentenced to death and executed for the 1985 rape and murder of 7-year-old Paula Dyer in Knoxville. He was 26 at the time and babysitting, and he was drunk, and he got in a fight with the mother. She still went out to go party, and he was watching the kids for some reason. And he raped the 7-year-old girl in her sleep, beat her to death, strangled her to death, and then called friends and said, hey, I don't know what happened to her. They found that, wow, her genitals were lacerated. That's okay. So they killed him. quite the gang in there that people outside are holding picket signs for, but to each their own. They really should get lethal injections figured out so these guys can stop whining about cruelty. Though it is annoying. I hear fentanyl works. The threat of a botched execution is gratifying, though, in many ways, I should say, knowing there's fear and discomfort there for guys like David Earl Miller and those other gentlemen we just met. It's kind of nice to know that they're scared. Maybe lethal injections are working just fine after all. botched or not. Something to think about, eh? I know. People get sentenced to death who maybe didn't do what it was that they're accused of, and that's an issue. But I think for guys whose sperm and DNA were found on 7-year-old girls that they'd strangled and raped to death, you know, their handprints imprinted on the insides of their thighs of the victims and all that kind of thing. I think for those guys, we could probably just get rid of them. Maybe it's just me. Until next time, keep those eyes cocked, those doors locked, and stay paranoid. I'll talk to you as soon as I can. Check out Patreon. Check out Dark Topic Plus on Apple for exclusives. Anyways, I guess I'm having problems with my audio here again. I'm in Disney World. I'm going to head back out into it. I had this written. I couldn't get it out before I left. I just want to thank everyone for the support. The reason why I'm here in Disney, did I say land? World in Orlando is because of you. And I'm very fortunate. I didn't grow up in a situation where I was able to go to Disney World. And many of us didn't. To be here, I hate it. I fucking hate it. I hate it. But I put that aside, the idea that everybody is overpacking a place that doesn't deserve this type of business because they overcharge the shit out of everyone and, you know, gouge you at every opportunity they get while claiming to be the most magical place on earth. That bothers me, standing in lines with a bunch of assholes, entitled assholes who are, you know, wearing Mickey ears and don't even have children with them. And they're just kind of like, oh, my magical childhood's happening forever. That bugs me a little bit. But all that aside, my kids are getting a great experience here. My girl loves the place. She grew up in, and she was able to come here a few times, and she's happy to be able to share this with me and with our kids. And I thank you. I thank you for fucking putting me in this spot where I got to do it. Now it's, I'm going to get the right attitude in a moment. It'll probably take a couple of beers, maybe 3 margaritas. That'll cost me $20 a piece, but I'll get there. All I need to see is the smile on my child's face. That's all I need to see for this. And you know what? I could have seen that smile in any situation. I've seen that smile on my child's face, taking him to baseball practice, you know, taking him to a hill in the middle of nowhere out where we're from and just teaching him how to roll down a hill on a garbage bag. It's just about the time spent. But I am particularly thankful for the venue in which I'm able to go to here this week with my family that you all have afforded me to be able to do. Thank you. So I'd rather have a garbage bag, honestly, right now going down a hill in the cold. But I'll hop into a ride after 50 minutes that will... hopefully kill me and put me into a garbage bag. Eyes cocked, doors locked, stay paranoid. I'll talk at you real soon once I get back. Thank you.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.